Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cage Chat with Sioux Falls Canaries manager Mike Meyer. Cage Chat is a weekly program that gives you, the fans, the opportunity to ask the Sioux Falls manager questions about the Canaries, baseball or sports in general, or just seek Mike's wisdom about life events that are going on. In this week's episode, the skipper provides some advice to a young man deciding whether he should continue on his pitching career. We find out if he's a laid-back manager during the game. And is the skipper mean in how he hides Easter eggs? Let's find out on Cage Chat.
Well, let's welcome back manager Mike Meyer. Mike, do you have team updates for us?
Yeah, it hasn't gone through transactions yet, but we came to terms with Mike Hart. So we're excited to have him back. He's been getting better every year, and last year he had a breakout year, made the All-Star team, and, was one of our best players until he popped his hammy. Took him a little bit to get back on track, but, if we can keep him healthy, he's a dynamic player. Got a little Pete Rose in him, plays really hard, and been working with him the last couple of years on trying to tone it down a little bit just to make sure he can be in the lineup every day. But we're excited to have him. He's a do-it-all, player. Can play infield in the pinch. He's can play all three outfield positions, and he's really solid behind the plate, catching for us. So we're excited to have him back.
Yeah, I'd like to ask a little bit about him because you've talked about this a little bit on the show in the last few weeks, and I'm just looking at, he's a young guy, can play, mm-hmm. plays good behind the plate, good outfielder, plays hard, good bat. What's a guy like that have to do to get noticed by affiliate clubs?
Yeah, it's a puzzle. It's puzzling for sure. We're not really sure why he hasn't had an opportunity. I know the Diamondbacks is one organization that really likes Mike Hart, and I think it comes down to, do they have a spot somewhere in high A that, they could use for him to go and improve his worth? Because he's got some good power. He hits for average. He can really run. He's an unbelievable corner outfielder. And he can play center. He's not a traditional center fielder, but he can play center. So it's one of those deals where he definitely deserves to have an opportunity.
Yeah, I saw, still kind of stunning to me, but I don't understand affiliate clubs sometimes, so what do you do?
Yeah, I know, right?
Well, let's head to fan questions this week, and, wait a minute, I lost my sheet. Hold on a minute here. Where did my little sheet go? There we go. Let's head to fan questions this week, and we start with Ron. He says, I'm discouraged by your thoughts on the state of pitching and if I would have a chance to make it to the majors because I don't really have a power arm. Do you think it is best that I start looking at playing a different position if I am going to get a chance, or do you recommend doing something like learning how to throw a knuckleball?
Well, it's really tough with the knuckleball. There's not a lot of organizations these days, whether it's independent or affiliates that trust knuckleballers. It's kind of a lost art as well. It's, for one, it's extremely difficult to throw strikes with. Two, if you do have a really good knuckleball and it's hard to hit, it's just as hard to catch. And so it makes, catching extremely difficult. You lose a lot of strikes because the catchers can't really stick a knuckleball. So I don't recommend a knuckleball unless it's a last resort. But depending on how old you are, a lot of us don't hit our peak physically until we're 25 or so. So if you're, a mid-80s, upper-80s guy, and you're 17, 18 years old, it doesn't mean that you're not going to be throwing low to mid-90s by the time you get to be mid-20s. So if you're a good pitcher, a lot of the times the guys that end up being really successful, like a John Brebbia, he learned how to locate his fastball, pinpoint accuracy. He learned the art of changing speeds, changing eye angles, and all that sort of thing. And by the time he got to be 25 years old, his velocity started to increase from being 89 to 92 to 93 to 97. I don't necessarily think that it's something, if you're a younger person, to give up on pitching just because you're not throwing 95 at, 17 or 18 years old. A lot of us, don't develop that explosiveness and really, mature physically until we get to mid-20s.
Ron would also like to know, do you look at training ideas like long toss or long distance running or running more sprints as ways that I could add power or velocity to my pitches?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, there's a lot of different new age stuff, weighted balls, core exercise stuff, explosive stuff that guys use now to build up their arm strength. I think it's great off-season training. I do think that we overdo it a little bit in season. I've had guys in the past that have built up their velo using weighted balls, and then tried to continue that during season. And ultimately what happens is they never are fresh. They're always a little tired, you know. And so what I recommend is if you want to do some of the weighted ball stuff, do it in the off season, mix in your long toss. Then when you get to your playing season and you're asked to perform on the mound, stick to just the long toss in between your starts or in between your outings, and put down the weighted balls until the next off season. As far as running, distance running used to be the thing when I was playing. If you were a starting pitcher, they wanted you to have high endurance and be able to run 10 miles. That way, their theory was you'd be able to maintain your strength, you know, at the 100 pitch mark. But new age stuff and what I believe in is more explosive work. So you want to do more sprint stuff. You want to be explosive. And you want to train your body to be explosive from pitch one to pitch, you know, 115 or whatever it is that you're, however long you're in the game. And if you can figure out a way to train your body to have that explosive endurance, that's the best way to build that velocity. Because what happens a lot of the time when we do distance running, we lose a little bit of our explosiveness. And so if we're a 90 to 92 guy, after running distances for a few months, you know, where you're getting 10-mile jogs in, you lose that explosiveness, and now all of a sudden you're peaking at 88 to 90. Where if you can train your body to be explosive, you can maintain that 90 to 92.
Jeff says, when a guy's returning back for an injury, you'll see that his prior season that he didn't have particularly good stats. How do you know that that's just a result of his injury and an aberration, or if it could be some sign of a long-term or declining career going for him, if that made sense?
Yeah, it's always tough. That's always tough. And, you know, one of the things that we do is we have to trust what information we're getting from the player. You know, for example, you have a guy like Grady Wood, who in 17 was one of the best pitchers in the American Association. Started dealing with a little bit of elbow issues at the end of that season. 2018, Tommy John, I think in his first or second start for us. You know, last year he felt like he was ready to go, and we brought him into spring training, and he wasn't. You know, but it's one of those deals with anybody that's gone through arm injuries. If you can't really trust it and let it go, it's going to affect your performance. And so you got to look at the total picture. If you've got a guy that's had really good numbers for a few years and has a down year but has an arm injury attached to that, you're hoping that when he's fully healthy, he gets back to that, you know, quality arm, you know, with the numbers, you know, that he had prior to the arm injury. And it's a guessing game because, you know, a lot of the times it works out in your favor and they come back and they're really a big, you know, bonus for you because you're not really counting on them. But there's also equally, they never make it back to their, you know, top self.
Is that just kind of a sixth sense as a manager coach that you kind of learn over time about? You could see something in the person or something that just allows you to have a better feel for whether that's just an aberration from the year before? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think you can a little bit, but I also think that what, you know, the guys that have been doing this for a long time, they bring those guys in as more of a wild card. Look, I'm going to bring this guy in. If he gets back to what he was before, he's going to be a really big benefit for us, and usually you can sign those guys for less money on your salary cap because they didn't have a a good year. For example, for us, Andrew Ely. You know, he was coming off a terrible year in Double A with the Mets, where he didn't hit at all. But, you know, he kept saying it was because of his shoulder injury he had on his right arm, and he's a left-handed hitter, so it was his lead arm. And so for him, he just wasn't able to let it go with the bat. You know, and so we were projecting, okay, if he comes back and let's say he's not any better offensively, we're still getting an elite shortstop if he can make all the throws. But if this guy turns out to be fully healthy, and that was just an aberration, his numbers because of the injury, it's a bonus. And for us, that's what happened. Ely was better numbers-wise than he had been in a couple of seasons because he was finally healthy again. And it goes the same way with pitching, you know. And so if you kind of don't rely on them and say, oh, this guy's going to be my number one because he's got this long pedigree out for 18 months with Tommy John, and you're counting on that guy, when he doesn't get fully healthy, it really kills you. But if you pencil him in as the sixth or seventh starter in your rotation, and he comes back and he is fully healthy, it's, you know, a huge bonus for you. And I think that's one of the things that I've been learning over the years is not counting on those guys as much, but we're going to bring him in and see if he can be back to what he was before.
Jeff would also like to know, are you looking for a specific type of hitter for the Birdcage?
It depends on where we're penciling them in the lineup, you know, in our projections. I think one of the things that we did this last year we've talked about, you know, was kind of getting rid of the big-time slugging percentage guys 1 through 9 in our lineup and having a couple of those guys that are going to swing and miss, but they're also going to hit doubles and homers, but add a bunch of guys around them that are more ambush guys that put the ball in play. They're maybe not going to hit the 20 home runs, but they're on bases a little bit higher. The strikeouts are going to be way down, and they can really run, because whenever you can really run, it's all the great Sioux City offenses or Wichita's great teams, and now Cleburne last year, where they've got a bunch of guys in their lineup where every pitch you throw, you know, they're looking to ambush it. And even when they don't hit it well, if they chop it into the ground or whatever, it's still going to be a tough play to get that out because they can really move. And so that's kind of one of the shifts that we've made in our ballpark, is not looking for the slugging guys to hit home runs because ours is a launching pad, but to get a bunch of guys that can get on base and have a couple of guys, because we're going to get that extra boost in power production numbers from guys playing in our ballpark. You know, for example, Ole Lago, who was never really a big slugging percentage guy in his career, but he was a, you know, a solid hitter and a good on-base percentage guy, and you put him in the Birdcage and all of a sudden our production numbers skyrocket because he's getting that added bonus of playing in the Birdcage for half the games. So that's kind of what, you know, I look for in hitters.
Awesome. Barry would like to know, why is bunting such a lost art?
Well, it depends on what you're using it for. I think if you look around, there's still quite a few guys that are using the drag bunt and push bunts to try to get on base. It's the sacrifice bunts that is really not used as much, and it's because the numbers will tell you that you're just giving it out. And if I was pitching, or when we're on defense, if the other team is going to sack bunt, we're going to take that out. Because that's one less out we've got to get of the 27 to win the game. You know, it's a free out. Because at our level, if they're sack bunting, 99 out of 100, we're going to be able to field it, throw it to first base, and get that out. So I don't think, you know, it's as much value as it was in baseball for 100 years, now that we have all the numbers showing us that it's not as valuable. And it's the same thing as, like, hit and runs. Teams don't really hit and run as much. They'll do what we started doing a lot more of, you know, what we call a run and hit, where if we've got a guy that can take a base and he's at first base, we want him to try to steal that base. But instead of old school where you got a base stealer that takes off, the hitter will take that pitch, you know, hoping that he steals second and he's in scoring position. But what we want to do is if we get a good pitch to hit, we want to hammer that sucker in a gap somewhere, and now we've got to run in and a runner on second. You know, so you don't really do the traditional hit and run where you're sacrificing your at bat, because a lot of the times you get a bad pitch to swing at and you're going to have weak contact, or you're going to swing through it. And now, you know, you're in an unfavorable situation. So I think numbers kind of suggest that. And it's no different than you look at the NBA, where they started realizing these guys are shooting a higher percentage of threes, you know, making a higher percentage of threes. Why wouldn't you take the three? It's worth more points. And the ultimate goal is to score more points than the other team.
Makes great sense. Tom would like to know if you're a laid-back manager during games.
Yeah, extremely. Maybe too much at times. You know, but I like to put the lineup up, trust my guys are going to get the job done, you know, and just let them go out and play. I don't want them looking over their shoulder. You know, I don't want them feeling tense at the plate or on the mound. I really just want them to go out and relax and do what they've done their whole life. You know, and there's times when I maybe need to, you know, get in their rear ends a little bit and raise my voice, you know, and demand a little bit more. But, you know, that's something that I'm learning to do, and pick my times when I'm gonna get on them a little bit, because I don't think maybe their effort is as high as it needs to be. You know, but I do like to be a little bit more laid back. And those are the managers that I performed significantly better playing for.
So we like Mike Meyer keeping this a G-rated show. We like that right there. So Donna says, this is so cute that you make your wife cards. You're a good husband. Do you also put little notes to her as well?
Yeah, so the cards are like, you know, my version of a Hallmark card. So I'll write, you know, a little note in there, and it's usually something that's either funny or, you know, or nice. And a lot of the times it just has to do with where we are in our lives and, you know, just making sure that she knows how much I love her and I need her and that she means to me. And, you know, I'll do funny drawings a lot of the times. Like, we're big Walking Dead fans. And, you know, so, for example, spoiler alert, but Rick and Michonne kind of get together. And so I'll draw a picture of Rick and Michonne and, you know, just write something funny in there that, you know, describes, you know, how much I care for her and need her.
Just want to say, very disappointed. We're going to have to wait months before the season finale of The Walking Dead. Just want to throw that out there.
I know it.
What can you do, though? Sam says, that's really cool you're listening to podcasts. What kind of shows or topics appeal to you in podcasts?
Well, I like a lot of the true crime stuff and a lot of the, you know, biological stuff when it comes to psyches. You know, what causes people to commit crimes, especially the serial criminals, you know, what happened in their childhood, certain events that have, you know, caused them to make the switch. Because I ultimately believe that, you know, we all start off good, and, you know, there's certain events that happen in our life, you know, our lives that, you know, that steer us into doing either better things or, you know, obviously with the criminals, you know, doing, you know, worse things. So a lot of, you know, I really, and this is going to sound weird, but, you know, I really enjoy getting deep into, you know, the psyche of, you know, serial killers. I don't know if anybody's seen the series Mindhunter, but, you know, I'm fascinated by that and similarities between, you know, Dahmer and Gacy and Bundy and, you know, what were events that happened to them, what, you know, their relationships with their mother, father, or siblings caused them to become like that.
Next up is Bill, who says, do you think that you will shake hands with people anymore after the pandemic is over?
Yeah, I know. Crazy, right? So, you know, I think that's going to end up being a ways down the road, I think, before people are comfortable with, you know, shaking hands and hugs and that sort of thing. You know, I almost wonder if we take on a little bit more of the Japanese way and bow, you know, instead of shaking hands, or we do an elbow, you know, high five or, you know, something like that. I don't, for me personally, I think once we kind of get over this and it seems like it's a little bit more safe, I think I'll be back to shaking hands and giving hugs as quick as I possibly can.
Brandon says, talking about April Fool's Day jokes last week, do pranks ever go awry, and how do you deal with that when they do?
They certainly do. There was one prank that, it's a really funny bit that happens throughout baseball, and I think it's probably been going on forever and ever and ever. It's called a hot foot. Where you take a little piece of tape, and you attach it to one of the players' spikes, you know, without them obviously knowing, and you can put a little accelerant on there. There's the sticky spray that the trainers have, and then you sneak up from behind or underneath and you light it on fire, and the tape kind of goes up in flames, and all of a sudden they feel something hot on their leg, and you know, they jump around and everybody laughs. But we've had one particular time, I want to say we were in Fargo, and we did that prank, and I think the guys that did it put a little bit too much accelerant on it because it got pretty hot pretty quick, and before the player even realized, it had melted his pants, and they were his personal pants, not team-issued pants, and so he was pretty upset with that, and, you know, obviously it's, you know, giving him some space, you know, because he was pretty upset about it. And then talking to him, saying, hey, look, we never meant to, you know, have it go that far. We apologize. You know, we'll chip in and buy you a new pair of pants, you know, something like that.
And we end with Mark this week, who says, your daughters may be a little too old for this now, but when they were younger and you hid Easter eggs at Easter time, were you a mean hider that made it difficult for them to find them?
I like to try to, you know, make sure that it's fun, but also challenging. There's nothing worse than just, you know, throwing the eggs out in the lawn and, oh, look, kids, you know. So we try to be inventive and, you know, find places. And as she got older, I started, we have, you know, gardens and flower beds and tomato plants and all that sort of thing. So I try to use the colors of the dyed eggs, you know, to kind of blend in. So if they colored some green eggs, I'm going to try to find, you know, some foliage that's green and hide it in there. And the real challenging part is remembering where I hid all the eggs. But yeah, I try to make it a little challenging. I want it to, last for a little while. It's not a 2 minute, oh, I found all the eggs and you're done. So I try to be a little challenging.
That's awesome. Thanks for joining us this week, Mike.
All right, I appreciate it, Rob. You have a good one.
We want to thank Mike Meyer for joining us on Cage Chat this week. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Sioux Falls manager, please send them to us at askmike@minorleaguesportsreport.com. That's askmike@minorleaguesportsreport.com. Please have your questions to us by Wednesday evening so we can give the skipper a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Pannier, the managing editor of the Minor League Sports Report, and we'll see you next time on Cage Chat.